Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Voices for Victory podcast. I'm your host, Mick McDonald. As the calendar turns to March, college basketball takes over the national landscape. We fill out our brackets and find our favorite Cinderella, wondering who might join Jim in the 83 Wolfpack among history's greatest underdog stories. With that in mind, today we are joined by, without question, one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. Ralph Sampson was a three-time winner of the Naismith Men's College Basketball Player of the Year Award from 1981 to 83, and his Cavaliers were a big part of the Survive and Advance story. They lost to Jim Valvano's NC State team in both the ACC Tournament Championship game and the NCAA Regional Finals. Today, we talk to Ralph about his father's battles with cancer, why he's become an important part of the V Foundation's Virginia Vine fundraising event, and what he and his teammates really thought going up against the Cardiac Pack in 1983. And now, our conversation with Ralph Sampson.
And I always have to think about what's important in life is to think to me of three things: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. Those are the three things that I try and do every day.
And we are now joined on the Voices for Victory podcast by Ralph Sampson. Ralph, thanks so much for taking some time to chat with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So to get going, I want to talk a little bit about your personal connection to cancer, because I know it's something that has hit you hard. Your dad has had to deal with both lung and prostate cancer. So first off, what do you remember about when you first found out that something was wrong and was going on with your dad?
As the story goes, I was living in Atlanta, Georgia at the time. My sister called me and said, your father's hurting and he needed to go to the hospital and he won't go. And so it was like 8-9 o'clock at night. I called him back and said, you better be in the hospital by the time I get there. I jumped in my car, got everything together. I drove 8 hours straight. I met him in the hospital that next morning, where he had supposedly had a hernia, and he couldn't go to the bathroom, and it was fairly large, et cetera, et cetera. So we commenced to that, took pictures of his, chest and all the tests you want to make. And we did that, and so he was fine. So we proceeded to get the hernia taken care of, and the outpatient surgery of the hernia, we find out then that after the surgery, he comes home and he falls out in my arms, and I basically call the ambulance and take him back to the hospital. Henceforth, we took an x-ray of his chest, didn't know if it was a heart attack, seizure, or stroke. And then we ran some full body tests on him as well. And we found the prostate issue, which we knew a little bit about because of the hernia. But then we also found a lung issue as well. Now, understand this, that the year before, and my dad is very healthy, we had gone to the hospital where he gets his x-rays, and he had a little bit of pneumonia, and we had x-ray that was nothing 1 year before that on his x-ray at all that would indicate any cancer. So 1 year later, the doctors in this lovely small town of mine said, there's a spot there, and we need to do something about it ASAP. So I think, okay, great. So I got not only a hernia to do, two hernias to deal with and prostate to deal with, but I got lung cancer to deal with as well, supposedly. So I forego the prostate stuff initially because I didn't think that was too bad. And I knew that radiation probably would help that from the doctor's reports. And I commenced to go to the lung issue. So then I moved from the small hospital to the big hospital at University of Virginia, because the little hospital said, we got to do something right away and we need to do something now and do an operation. I said, not yet, I got to get a second opinion. The big hospital, University of Virginia, went over and we went to work right away on him. And they said, no, let's do a biopsy. Let's figure this out. Let's do something. I had about 6-7 doctors on this report at University of Virginia Hospital. We got a report and they said we could do something about it. I was, okay, great. So we got a plan, not just from the operation, but nutrition, to all the stuff we needed. We had like a 6 to 8 week plan to get him where he needed to be before this operation took place. The key significant thing that my dad, that I realized in coming back and moving back to Virginia at that point in time, was this. One, I would take him to and from the doctor's office on a day-by-day basis, and that was 1 hour drive, and we would sit in the car and drive And my dad loved to talk, and I started to understand more about my father than I would ever knew spending that quality time with him. And he worked, my dad worked till he was 80, and I understood that that was keeping him alive as well. So we drive back and forth, and he was singing gospel songs on the way over and on the way back. The doctor did a biopsy on his left nose and his lung through his throat and neck, and said, well, we might hit your vocal cords, and it might be raspy when you talk or sing, because my dad loved to sing in church. My dad gets off the operating table, gets in the recovery. We walking out of the doctor's office in the hospital, he's singing the Lord's Prayer to the nurses, because he said that doctor said I wouldn't be able to sing. And he was singing right after we got out of the operation. So I thought that was pretty impressive. And I knew that he was going to be all right at that point in time. We then went forth and got the operation on his lung, took his left lobe of his left lung out. And again, another surreal thing happened. Now, when you are a caretaker, you see everything about your parents or whoever you care caretaker to. So I had to give him a bath the night before the operation, do all the stuff I needed to do, et cetera. And then I had all my children call him because I wanted to make sure he was going to be all right. Because he remembers his mother, my grandmother, having an operation on her left breast, and she had some lumps and some cancer in there as well, but she had a stroke on the table. She came back, but she couldn't speak or walk. So my dad was remembering that as well. My daughter Anna called my dad and said, Granddad, I'm praying for you. You're going to be all right. My dad started to cry in the hotel room and said, I know I'm going to be all right. We went into the operation. It was a successful operation. His mindset was really, really good. He came out of that. We spent 3 or 4 days in the hospital, and he recovered very nicely. Henceforth, we had to go back and deal with the prostate issue as well. So we got the other hernia fixed. And then we had the radiation, which I took him every day for 8 weeks to radiation. Now you have to understand the healthcare system in this country sucks. Small hospital, big hospital. We would go to our small hospital and go to radiation, and sometimes the radiation machine wouldn't work. Sometimes they brought in a new radiation machine on a tractor trailer, put it in the back of the hospital, make that one work. And sometimes that didn't work. So I was an advocate for all of that and what I do with my dad, but also with other people that I saw that needed this great care. Henceforth, we created the Sampson Family Foundation, and we got the Ralph L. Sampson Senior Hope Fund that we've raised over $300,000 for thus far in helping people with their medicine and their travel and their caregiving. So that's pretty much my story with my dad. He's 84 now, and he's still 100% healthy, no cancer, no issue. And ironically, the doctor said, you don't have to come back to the doctor anymore for checkups. I was like, no, no, no. We got great insurance, and we get 2 checkups a year, no matter what. So that's my dad's story.
And I just, that's an amazing story. And I'm, first of all, I'm glad to hear he's still doing great. And I'm sure still singing to nurses any chance he gets, it sounds like. The great work that you've done with your foundation too is just incredible that it all kind of came from this with, with your dad, you know, going through all this. But I wonder, you know, it sounded to me, Ralph, like when you found out that, okay, this is something that your dad had to deal with, was there any of that, the emotional side of, oh my gosh, you know, my dad's dealing with cancer? Or was it straight to, okay, here's a problem, here's how we're going to solve it, let's move forward? Was it a quick transition for you to get into that mode?
It was like 30 seconds. we got a very close-knit family. So I came home, I sold my house, everything I had in Atlanta. I moved back in the house with my parents. My one sister lived with my parents, and the other sister lived in Lynchburg, Virginia, and she came back home and got her job, a new job in the same city, so she could be there on an ongoing basis as well. I took care of the medical stuff. My one sister took care of the nutrition stuff, and my other sister took care of just the housekeeping and the love for my dad, and we all worked together to get that done. The crazy part about that, when you have 3 siblings in the same household with your parents, the house is a little small. After you get a little older, you got too much stuff. So henceforth, after I sold my stuff in Atlanta, I got another house. Actually, some friends around had a house that I could rent out. And said, it's always in bad shape. I said, it's in bad shape. We'll get great. But it was a nice structured house. I said, I'll fix it. I'll clean it. And I'll do that. So I went to clean the house so I can live in it. Did the kitchen and the bedroom. And that's it. And the bathroom. And then was at my parents' house most days. End up actually now selling that house to my sister. Now she's done renovated and it's very, very nice. But to say all that, it took me only 30 seconds to make that decision.
And I love to hear the story of the family coming together, right? Rallying together to make it all work. So I think that's great. I want to ask you too, just obviously with everything that has been going on the past year with the COVID-19 pandemic. For someone, you know, your dad is a cancer survivor, that obviously makes him more vulnerable. Has that been some added stress for you in trying to make sure that he stays safe through all this?
It's not been any added stress. We responded to his issues and anything else that we respond to. We just said, okay, here's the plan. We have, as a family and even our businesses, it's never come out of phase one as far as how we handle people in our businesses and people come into our offices as well. And we shut some of our offices down due to that. And then the really issue with that, I mean, you understand, it's COVID. Staying at home with my dad has actually hurt him more than the cancer has. Just because not being active, not going out to see his friends, not driving around on a day-by-day basis and doing stuff, it's kind of shut him down. So we have to keep him active at the house where we got, you know, some weights for him. We walk him around now with the wintertime and the snowstorm stuff going on. It becomes a hassle, but come springtime, he'll be back active again, walking and doing his thing. So we just think the COVID thing has slowed him down mentally and physically, but we keep him sharp. We keep him going as much as we can. We keep him singing, you know, a couple nights a week, even in the basement of the house, saying the Lord's Prayer, whatever else he wants to sing. So we believe in that, but this COVID has slowed a lot of people down. We were concerned about it. He would sneak out of the house every now and then and go driving. And I'm going down to my favorite restaurant and eat. We noticed it one day, and my sister jumped him and said, like, you bring your tail in the house. You got to come back, come back, come back. He didn't have a mask on. I just want to go see my friends. We said, you can't do that. So I had to have a long chat with him and said, look, are you ready to check out? He said, no. I said, you know, okay, do I need to take your keys? He said, no. And I ended up actually, I have his truck today because I had a little accident in my car, but like, you need to bring my truck back. I need to get out. So we just put some rules around it and we all just chipped in as a family and made it possible.
I know you mentioned, you know, he receives great care at the Cancer Center at the University of Virginia. And we've also, of course, through the V Foundation funded cancer research there. A lot of that through our Virginia Vine event, which you've become a big part of the Virginia Vine event as part of our team. Was that just sort of the perfect storm for you as a great way to get involved with the V Foundation and still be kind of tied to Virginia?
Well, you know, the V Foundation is very, very near and dear to my heart. And from, you know, the Jimmy Valvano days and Derek Whitford days playing against him, you know, in college. And then also understanding his plight, you know, after that and seeing him up on the stage with the ESPN Awards saying, never, never give up. Never give up. You know, and actually, I think that's, I mean, everybody in their mind has ever seen that. It sticks with you, especially when you have a caregiver and you have people with cancer or issues. You can't give up until, you know, it's the last day. So I won't give up with anything from that standpoint. But being the fact that it's associated with University of Virginia Hospital, one, Derek Wittenberg, a special friend of mine, and Virginia Vine, and the event that I saw up in Salamander was amazing to me. So it made me even more hungry to get more involved and help somebody else out. And then henceforth that we just keep doing that on a day-by-day basis, just because people need help out here and they get it done. The disparity amongst the healthcare system in this country is just crazy, not good. From a small hospital where my dad said, one doc said, we need to do something right now because they want to do the operation, to the large hospital said, no, we're not going to operate. To a whole hospital in California that I went to has a state-of-the-art equipment that I've seen. Because when I started with my dad's stuff, I wanted to research everything I could, no matter what it was. And I did all my research. I went around the country, did my research, found the best doctors, best medical equipment, because I think that he needed that. He deserved that. He was, you know, in his 70s, he's a special man to me, and he was a special man to a lot of people. One of the stories that I said earlier, alluded to, is he didn't stop working until he was 80. And I didn't understand the significance of that because he didn't do much when he worked. He worked for the city of Harrisonburg, and they loved him to death. But he went from every department because they're like almost like the vice mayor or something like that. And he was doing all this stuff. And they would sit down and talk to him all day long. He'd come back from home and do 2 hours of lunch and watch his soaps and go back to work. I'm like, why are you doing this? You need to quit. But I went with him one day when I came back, and I realized that these people actually keep him alive. So my dad wouldn't drink water. One of the key factors of actually the great thing of water, he wouldn't drink water, so his body wasn't hydrated enough. So I'd take cases of water to everywhere he would stop, and all these ladies loved my dad, and they would make him drink water. And he would get so mad at me, why are you leaving this water here in this place? I got to go to the bathroom. It makes me go. I said, look, you won't drink this water because you got this chemo. We got to flush it out your body. He spent a number of months in chemo. He only had one bad day in chemo. And he was tired. I said, stand in bed and go to sleep. The next day he was up moving. It's because of the nutrition things we did with him, with the nutritionist, eating bananas every day. And certainly now I'm a big believer in bananas at that situation because he'd been eating for years. And being hydrated and drinking a lot of water, I think, was crucial to what he was doing as well. So the story of the baths, the situation was special for me, as you can tell, having my dad with me on an ongoing basis, moving back from Atlanta, selling everything I had, just to be with him, you know, if anything happened to him, and he's still with us at 84. And I'm so proud that he's here with us to share this. Obviously, COVID thing is hard, but to share the more experience with him has been very special for me and my family.
Yeah, that is a silver lining, right? More time with your family that you may not have otherwise gotten. You mentioned, you're kind of intertwined with Coach Valvano and with Derek Wittenberg. A big part of that, of course, is the 1983 season. That was your senior year at Virginia. You guys are a behemoth, a powerhouse. You guys, by the time the ACC tournament rolls around, you guys have already beaten State twice that year. They upset Carolina. Who had a guy named Michael Jordan on the team. And you guys are going to play them in the ACC finals. I wonder what was kind of your guys' mentality before that game with Coach Holland. Was it, okay, we got a break that we're getting State instead of Carolina. We got to roll them now. What was it? Or were you guys saying, hey, watch out, this team's dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, again, what a perfect storm, right? So you think about it. Think about the history of all that right now. Me and Derek always laugh about it. He does my podcast in the Court 50 sometimes with me as well. And we talk about, okay, during that season, he was playing us and he was shooting a three-pointer and I was trying to block a shot. He went down, he twisted his ankle and had a really bad sprained ankle most of that season as well. Henceforth, if it goes to the ACC tournament, they had to win the ACC tournament to be an NCAA tournament. They had to win it or not go. Not only did they beat us in the final game, they beat Michael Jordan. They beat a whole host of NBA All-Star Hall of Fame players up until the end of the thing, from us, the great Michael Jordan, myself, to beating us again, to beating Hakeem Olajuwon and the rest of the crew to win the title. And I always tell Derek, I say, what, that last shot that you put up, was it a shot or a pass? He said it was a pass, but we know Derek Wittenberg, we know it all with a shot because he never turned down a shot.
That's right.
So to see that happen, it's all in faith and spirit. See that happen and understand the plight of why that happened, because I don't like to lose. Back then, I was mad as all get out because we did lose. But now I can go back and say two things in my life that when I lost the game, it has some significant meanings in life after the fact. One is the Chaminade game that we played over there that we lost coming back, and it ended up creating a Maui Classic, and that's been going on for 35, 40 years, which is very significant because of that game for me. Not that I wanted to lose that game, that's fine. And then the game against Derek Wittenberg lost, they created the V Foundation, but also that didn't help the foundation because of the cancer with Coach Valvano, but it's significant to me enough to know that championship still means a lot in the world of basketball today, and it will stand to mean a lot for history because of what happened. Sorry that Coach Valvano passed away, but his legacy will live on.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you that, Ralph. It's interesting that you said that because I know, how competitive a guy like you is, and you never want to lose, like you said. So that's interesting that you brought that up, that, there is some silver lining for you, and you can look back in that loss and say, hey, well, obviously your senior year, you wanted to win the championship and get back to the Final Four and all that. But, in a way you're tied. You're going to be always tied to the beginning of the V Foundation, because who knows, where the story goes if they don't go on that incredible run to win the championship. So, I think being a part of that, I'm sure, like you said, at the time, I'm sure it wasn't what you wanted, of course. But being a part of that it's part of your legacy too, which I think is something cool that you have as being friends with Derek. I'm sure Derek, never lets you hear about that when you two get together, right? He never brings that up, I'm sure.
No, I mean, we have such a friendship that we never really bring it up anymore. I mean, me and Derek go back to 1979, McDonald's All-Star game up in Washington, D.C., where he had Derek Wittenberg, Sidney Lowe, and Thurl Bailey on the same team against the National All-Stars, which I was supposed to be on that team, but they had like 6-7 footers, and like, okay, you in close proximity of Washington, D.C., so you can be on this team. So you can imagine, all the guys that were 1979 class, high school class, from Clark Kellogg to Sam Bowie to Derek Minifield. I mean, it was a whole host of high school All-Americans on that squad. And it was a very special event. Well, we ended up winning that game with myself, Darrell Wittenberg, Sidney Lowe, Quinn Daly, Darrell Bailey, Mike Tissot, and a bunch of other cast of characters that was from around the D.C. area. So we go way, way back. So we remember those times as well. We cherish them. We talk about them. We may embellish them a little bit every now and then because it's fun to do that. But otherwise, between that and the college and then the whole V Foundation thing, it's great now, I think, for us to be able to give back and tell those stories so people can understand, listen, but also give back in a special way through the foundation.
And I know that's a fun part of what the Virginia Vine event's going to be, right? You and Derek hanging out, telling stories, I think is that's a part of a conversation anyone wants to be a part of.
We did that last year, a couple years ago, and we just got up and battled back and forth, and we ended up raising a little bit of money there for the foundation because we said we would raffle off a game and go to a game with Virginia and NC State with me and Derek. And that was a fun time as well. We did that, and we took some fans to the game, and with Mark and the whole host of commentators, it was really fun to do that, and look forward to doing it again. So before
I let you go, Ralph, I do want to ask you about your alma mater at the University of Virginia and their basketball program. You played for an incredible coach in Terry Holland. But I want to ask you about, there was some lean years there in between Coach Holland leaving and when Tony Bennett got there about a decade ago. He's obviously done an incredible job turning the program around. And I know you're still around the program a decent bit. What's impressed you most about what Tony Bennett has done since he's come to Charlottesville?
Well, over the years, from Coach Holland on, there were some light leaders, as you said. Really finding the right mixture, the right coach, the right personality, the right character person for Virginia basketball. Because, as we all know it, Virginia basketball is special. It's not going to be a North Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA, back in the days because we wasn't based upon just athletics and basketball. We also was based upon education. One of the reasons that I stayed at University of Virginia for 4 years, it was one, I was on track to be track to graduate, and two, I was having a good time with my team and classmates as well. But Tony Bennett, just to say about him, I think University of Virginia, I said it many, many times before, that they should give him a lifetime contract. He's a special coach, but not only a special coach, a special person. I was able during the Final Four run of the championship 2 years ago to be with him and his wife and families from the first game to the last game. And the kinship that he has with his family and father and friends is special. I mean, we would go to the room after the game, and they would have a spread in the hotel room, and like it was a tailgate party, and it would be some of the stuff that they eat, like, bologna sandwiches and stuff like that. It wasn't anything flamboyant. It was the basic stuff, but we had the best time doing that whole season of the championship run. That was very special. And then I went to the first game and I don't know if I'm going to the next game. Like, you got to go to the next game. You got to go to them. So some alumni that I know and friends, we just band together and we went to those games, and henceforth they won the championship, which I tell everybody now, you got the longest tenure of a championship in NCAA history. You got 2 years now of a reign with that. And so that'll be very special in the history books, whatever, from the standpoint of winning the championship. But Tony Bennett is a one-of-a-kind coach, but a better person than a coach, I believe. And a better family man than any of those three. So it makes him a trifecta, and I think they should hire him for the rest of his life.
Well said, Ralph. And I think every Virginia fan would agree with you on Coach Bennett. That's all the time we've got today. Ralph, I can't thank you enough for coming and chatting with us and telling us some stories about your dad and for all you do for the V Foundation through your participation in the Virginia Vine event and all you do. We're just so lucky to have you as a part of our team. So thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope we get a chance to talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Be safe out there. And we look forward to seeing you at the V Foundation event soon.
Thanks again to Ralph Sampson for taking some time to join us today. And we hope all of you enjoyed the chat. For more information on the V Foundation or to make a donation, you can visit v.org. Make sure to follow us on all your favorite social media channels at the V Foundation. And please, subscribe to the Voices for Victory podcast wherever you listen, so you make sure you never miss an episode. And hey, if you want to leave a nice comment or a 5-star review, we'd love that too. Once again, I'm your host, Mick McDonald, and we'll be back with another episode before you know it. Until next time.
To me, there are three things we all should do every day. We do this every day of our life. you're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day.